nothing. You lose.
I've never been so high in my life.
The category is Butch Queen, Butch Queen, Butch Queen, first time in drags at a ball.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Who Shot Ya, a movie podcast that isn't just three straight white dudes. We got the opinions of mujeres, homosexuales, y un cubano, giving you your movie news reviews straight to your ear holes every week. Today, we'll be hollering about gambling movies, the Aaron Sorkin-Jessica Chastain collab O'Malley's Game, our best angry friend, Ingu Kang, will be calling in, and we'll have them stat picks. But before we get into all that, how about we talk to who I have in the studio here with me, and we also have a special guest, because that's what's up. To my left, film critic, host of the Maximum Fun podcast, Switchblade Sisters, it's Sometimes It Snows in April. Wolf, y'all.
Thanks for that intro.
April, what's good?
What's good is that I am endlessly fascinated by the women in my life and their obsession with something called Babyfoot. And I know that there's like 10 women who listen to this podcast who are like, shit, I know!
Finally!
But it's like, it is a product that if you put it on your feet and you like keep it there after you like soak your feet, it like all of the skin just comes right off. Like a whole like fucking layer of skin just like rips right off. All the calluses, all of it. And you have feet like a baby.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ooh, but the thing is, I don't use it, but I just love listening to women talk about it.
Sure.
Because it's just, and they'll show pictures, like they share pictures of all like the stuff peeling off. And I'm just like, I'm a peeler, a picker. And I love the photos. It's amazing. You got to just like look up baby foot pictures just if you get bored.
Yeah.
That's me.
That's me, guys. That's great. If people, if you got some funky feet out there, check out this baby foot, y'all. That's what's up. To my right, I have the host of the his own podcast, the Linoleum Night Podcast. He's the film reviews editor at The Rep. It's Alonzo Durante, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. What's good, Alonzo?
What's good is I a little bit of relative downtime, and so I've gotten to do some binging.
All right.
So I finally watched Big Mouth on Netflix, which is hilarious.
I thought it was funny. And
I finally watched season 4 of Transparent. I'm way behind on that one.
Okay.
But finally got caught up there, and I am now... Now I can't get the Israeli air conditioning jingle out of my head. So, you know, it's that kind of thing.
I have not seen any Transparent. I'm completely behind. I'm embarrassed about
it. Yeah. It's good. As Guy Branum likes to point out, not only one of the gayest shows on television, but the most Jewish show in the history of the medium.
Oh, that's what's up. L'chaim. And I don't know if y'all heard that other voice in the background there, but we have a special guest. If you listen to Maximum Fun, you've heard him on Pop Rocket. TV writer, producer, awesome, super duper trooper, Louis Fertel is in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
That was almost just the ABBA song title, Super Trooper, which would have been introduction enough. But thank you.
That's my shout out.
Feeling like a number one.
Yes.
Awesome super duper trooper is my shout out to Chicago house music. Tyree Cooper, he's the awesome super duper trooper. So that's where that is. Shout out to all my Chicago house fans out there. How are you, Louis? What's good with you?
Most things are good with me, actually. Shocking, because this is definitely my least favorite time of year outside of Oscar movie season.
Okay.
That said, I was recently acquainted with the fact that if you go to, like, a mall, and I went to the Beverly Center, which is always like a Kafka-esque experience, where it's just like everything's long and tall and gray. You know, just like everything's all wrong.
And they've made it look like a prison from the outside now.
Yes, no, right, exactly. But it's a sparkly prison. You know, it's like there's a vague glamour. I was there, and I was reacquainted with the fact that there's tons of cheap stuff there right now. So I got like just a camouflage sweater because it was $19.
Okay. Yes. Solid, dude. That's a solid
That's
purchase.
That's so good for when the draft is enacted.
Yes, right.
And you need to hide from the people who want to draft you.
Right.
Yeah, this camo hoodie is strictly for those same exact reasons. That's why I got it.
Right.
That's why I got it.
Well, what's good with you, Ricky?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Wow, that was quick. Bam.
And then he always gets to it before me.
What's good with me? Guys, I've been living a little bit of a lie. I had a Blu-ray player, RIP. She's no longer with us. And I couldn't play all my movies on there, so I go to Best Buy, and I bought a 4K HD Ultra Blu-ray player.
Ooh.
Oh, and I feel like a goddamn champion. I hugged everybody at the Best Buy as I bought it. pregnant, you know, people who have kids. You know, I get it now. I understand you come home with something.
Proud papa.
Yeah, exactly. And I've just been staying home and watching the movies that weren't working on my old player. So I've been watching, you know, the fun romantic comedy Taxi Driver.
Just solid
hiatus Ricky living is happening right now, y'all. That's what's up.
It's your best self.
It's my one true self, son.
How does Sybil look on the Blu-ray?
Like, the 4K. Done.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, stupid fine, dude.
I bet.
Like, stupid. Like, it's... I mean, that's an episode, yo. That's a whole nother episode. On this episode, though, we are going to be talking about gambling movies, as I mentioned before. We're going to be talking about Molly's Game, all that. Oh, we're also going to have our staff picks at the end of the show. But first, it is time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, which, as you know, is short for Is This Important? Do I Care? And here's how it works. I always read a news blurb or headline. Alonzo, April, or Lewis, if you please, will jump in with your take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? Well, the Golden Globes were last week, and I just wanted to go through some of the events at the ceremony. So for all of these, we're going to answer the two simple questions as always. Is this important? Do I care? Well, here's some things that that happened at the show. They said Mariah, on her way back from the bathroom, Mariah Carey took the first available of a seat. Turns out it belonged to Meryl Streep.
Any seat she finds is Mariah's. She was correct. These four seats belong to Mariah, too.
That's what makes her Cribs episode so interesting.
That's when I learned you could wear stilettos on a treadmill. Which I'm going to teach to my kids and my grandkids.
Does she really wear stilettos on a treadmill in Cribs?
She does.
God damn, Mariah.
There's never been more required viewing than that episode of Cribs.
I absolutely knew that the gays would have something to say about this. Like, I had nothing. I was like zero. I was just like, guys?
Yeah. We're from two different worlds, because you guys know the Mariah episode.
We watched the fucking Golden Globes.
I call her the R&B Jane Mansfield, which is very exciting.
Oh, I love this. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's good.
Ivanka Trump, she tweeted after Oprah's acceptance speech, which everybody loved. Ivanka Trump tweeted, "Just saw Oprah's empowering and inspiring speech at last night's Golden Globes. Let's all come together, women and men, and say, time's up."
To which I believe Alyssa Milano brilliantly responded, "Great, you should donate to our legal fund for all the women who've accused your father of grabbing
her." Nice.
Also, it's just remarkable that she thinks we care. She is empowered. It's like you've been given unprecedented power by someone through an abuse of power, and now you feel empowered. Congrats. You did it.
Yeah, woke Ivanka is not a look that ever works.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No. Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman pulled the...
Yes!
She pulled... You can say it again. Say it again. Let it out.
Yes!
Natalie Portman calling out the Hollywood Foreign Press for not nominating any women in the Best Directors category. I believe we have a clip of her doing that hot shit.
Play it.
And here are the all-male nominees. For The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro.
I wanted her to look around and be like, what? What? I said that. What?
For one thing, all-male nominees is grammatically, you know, not quite what she was going for there. But even putting that one aside, I wish she had made that joke when she first came out.
Yeah.
Like when she and Ron Howard did whatever the bullshit introduction were. If she said something like, the men nominated in this category, like she could have dropped that one early and, like, had it sizzle. Mm-hmm. Saying it right then meant the camera cut to five guys going, now I don't want it. And they're not at fault. The HFPA is at fault for not nominating any women. The guys who got the nominations are just like, I don't know.
Different thing, opinion in my head. So,
tell me.
This is the same thing that my husband said, and I said, well, you're wrong. Because the thing is, that, like, did any of these guys happen to look at the nominees list and say, hey, I wonder why there aren't any women on it? Did any of them speak up and happen to say that, like, that's maybe not a great thing? No, the women were in charge of doing that. If any of them had even mentioned the fact that they noticed that it was all men who were nominated any time before, around, or anything, that would have meant something, and, you know, maybe she wouldn't have said it right then. But the thing is that it means that every single man, whether they think they're complicit or not, needs to say something, or it will not change. So you know what? I do feel that like cutting to them is appropriate in this moment because they should feel a little bit like, oh, I do have a responsibility to say something.
Also, by the way, like we do treat it as an inevitability that all the directing nominees at the Oscars or whatever will be men.
Yeah.
So it's just like the fact that she brought it up, I thought was like, one, just hilarious. But two, I feel like a lot of people were like, oh, it's insulting to the nominees. But it's like, no, it's not. Like no one's, she's not saying they're bad directors or anything. So I thought it was just cutting enough without being... and disruptive enough without, like, derailing their fun.
I will say this, and this, I think, backs up your point, April, which is that over the course of the evening, you had all the women getting up and talking about activism and about, you know, Time's Up and about, you know, making a change and all that stuff. And none of the men said anything. Like, they wore black shirts. That was their contribution to the evening. So you're right. Certainly they didn't hold up their end of it either before or during. So, all right, you're right. I take it back. Good on you, Natalie Portman.
But I also think that the right and only acceptable man also won from that pick.
Sure.
I do
no.
think
Well,
that...
yeah.
Oh, Marvel Studios announced that they've gotten Kendrick Lamar, Kung Fu Kenny, and Anthony Top Dog Tippett to curate and produce the Black Panther soundtrack. Kendrick said the magnitude of this film showcases a great marriage of art and culture. I'm truly honored to contribute my knowledge of producing sound and writing music alongside Ryan and Marvel's vision. It's going to be the first time Marvel uses several original songs for one of their films. And actually, here's a clip of one of Kendrick's bangers that's going to be on the soundtrack, All the Stars.
What you gonna do to me? Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. Bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me. Fuck you and all your expectations. I don't even want your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises all in your conversation.
Kung Fu Kenny! Is this important? Do you all care?
Yes. Well, let me say this about Kendrick Lamar. I first of all would prefer everybody realize that he is the definitive award show performer. Like, people don't understand that if he's performing at your award show, like, the whole show bends around him.
Yeah.
I'm still recovering from, he performed All Right at the BET Awards, I'm going to say, like, 3 years ago. It is the best performance at an award show of the decade. And I need people to, like, talk about that the way they talk about, you know... Alanis Morissette being unplugged at the Grammys that one time. I don't know. Something at that level.
I'm here for you, bro. Say that shit right now. Let it all out.
Okay, well, I mean, it's been let.
The police cars on stage. Yeah, oh, the flames, dude. It was amazing. He had, like, all, like, the prisoners behind him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's up there with, like, Prince and Beyonce at, like, the Super Bowl.
That's a better example,
or at the Grammys, I should say. Or just Prince at the Super Bowl on his own.
Right.
I mean, yeah, like, that performance is
murdering it. Yeah. Yes.
Yep. What's another one we got here? Oh, do you guys care? Is this important to y'all? This past week, actress Catherine Deneuve and 100 other actresses, writers, academics, and businesswomen signed an open letter that criticizes the hashtag MeToo movement and denounces the witch hunt of men after the Harvey Weinstein revelations. April, don't hit me yet. The letter was published in the French newspaper Le Monde and calls a recent wave of sexual allegations a new puritanism and defends a man's freedom to pester. Is this important? Do you care?
It's fucking dumb. It is so dumb. And I felt so bad for, like, any of the young French female filmmakers who are coming up in this environment that is, like, these, you know, the old guard is saying, like, you should just deal with all the sexual harassment. Mm. And they're still trying to, like, make films. And it's hard for French women to get into filmmaking there, too, even though they've given birth to so many great female filmmakers, including my girl Julia Ducournau. And and I think that this letter is just so unnecessary. And France is, as we know, harboring a convicted child abuser, molester, Roman Polanski, and protects him at all costs. It just doesn't make any sense. And they're just so behind the times. It's crazy to think about how, you know, Paris and France are supposed to be so cosmopolitan, but they just don't understand equality. There's just something that culture apparently has just tried not to understand. over the years. Hmm. I do think that there are a lot of like younger people in that industry who are like, no, we don't feel that way. But it just sucks that they're not supported by the old guard. Here, you know, we've got Meryl Streep. We've got like our older people who are like, yes, like this is the way it should be. And we're going to speak out on your behalf as well as ours. And they don't have anyone. And it's just, it's so maddening to me.
I was going to say, I think this letter is changing the conversation in an unproductive way.
Yeah.
That, like, but it's basically what you're saying, like, by talking about hypothetical situations in which it's not as bad as other things, it's like, this is already like a shame-based way to frame it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get anything from what they're saying other than, well, you never know, things might get bad. Well, it's mostly been great. Calling people out. So how about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't complain as much, but...
Yeah, this is... This is a whole nother episode, guys. I'm agreeing with everything that everybody's saying. But this is, thank you for the conversation. That's kind of what we want to do here. And I think we kind of figured it out. I think, right? We came up with the answer.
Done.
That was it. Exactly.
Oh my God, solved it?
We solved sexism.
You guys, we solved sexism in the workplace.
Boom.
This is amazing.
You're welcome.
And there's still enough time for dinner.
That's why you're listening to our show out there, everybody. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll be talking gambling movies and Molly's Game.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McAvoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleet? Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Louis Fertel.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today, we're going to be talking about the film Molly's Game. Louis, can you do us a favor and just give us a quick synopsis of the film, please?
Yes. So this injured skier, Molly, gives up that career, and she basically starts being running these poker games of like high stakes. You may have heard like the Tobey Maguire, Leonardo DiCaprio-type poker games. And the movie basically... chronicles her time doing that, as well as coming out of it once she does a couple of illegal things that send her on a legal wrecking ball journey. Mm. And one of the movie's big things is, will she take this book deal? Which I think is very funny. But it's written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, and it sounds... that way. And it stars Jessica Chastain, who is, I say, her characters are like if Margot Robbie characters went to law school. So. It's about a stalwart, businessware clad dame.
Solid outfits in this movie. Yes. She's rocking some solid outfits in this movie. That is Molly's Game, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. There is a book deal plot.
Yes.
That keeps you on the edge of your seat. I thought that this movie was going to be kind of like a Rounders type movie starring Jessica Chastain. I hadn't seen a trailer. I just kind of seen like some stuff online, and then like right before I walked into the theater, I see Michael Cera like at the ArcLight. They have like the huge like TV screen that like flashes on the images, and I saw like Michael Cera and Kevin Costner. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, I knew Idris Elba was in it, and then I, you know, the movie starts, and I'm like, okay, this is what's happening, and then it's just kind of like a fun like mystery. What did she do wrong? Did she do something wrong? It's not like there's poker involved, but like the poker isn't. I didn't feel it was like overwhelming, and then it, you know, it's about. It felt like 4 hours too long when it got to like the 2 hour point.
I was gonna say when you said fun, I'm like, really? Was it?
No, when it gets to hour like at the 2 hour point, I remember being like, man. I'm ready to go. I want everybody to start giving one-word answers.
Yeah.
Because, like, it is so goddamn Sorkin. Sorkin is like the only guy where, like, you don't need a dialect coach if you're going to do one of his movies. You need, like, a breathing coach so you know how to get, like, all the goddamn words out. Everybody just keeps on going.
It's like being in a Sondheim musical.
What did you all think of the movie?
Well, I think Ingu and I had similar opinions, and she can probably speak to that. But there is a good movie in here, mm-hmm. and it is with Jessica Chastain, and it is early in the film, and it is it's a really strong character for her, and she fucking kills it too. You know, she's steely eyed and she's smart, and you know, she's really believable as this character, and we get to see her doing the kind of things that we usually see men do in these kind of wunderkind films, where you're like, oh, they're a genius, or like they're super special, extra smart. And, you know, we get to see those moments where she's kind of like looking at the poker table and taking it all in.
Yeah,
you know, that we never get to see that for women, but it's just like, ah, she's scheming and plotting, and we get to watch this.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys fans of the, like, second wave of Kevin Costner that is happening right now? I'm all in on this Kevin Costner.
I'm okay with, like, character actor five scenes Kevin Costner,
yeah.
But not when one of the scenes is as terrible as this one.
That
like, his big moment. I mean, he literally explains the lead character to herself, and it's just like... Stop it.
And by the way, and just in general in this movie, we're never at, like, begging for her to be decoded. Like, she's a pretty, like, I don't want to say relatable person, but I'm not, like, in the dark about why she's doing the things she's
doing.
Yeah,
it's not like she's doing something so strange and bizarre that has to be explained by someone. It's like, no, she's, you know, she sees an opportunity. She hops in. She's super ambitious. She's really smart. The skiing thing didn't work out, and now she's got this other stuff going on, and da-da-da. I was fine with that. I mean,
Was it like that she is a woman, too? Like, I just wonder if he would have done that with a male character. Like,
oh, never.
Yeah. Like,
never.
Explain that to you.
Does Steve Jobs have a scene like that? No.
Exactly.
No,
yeah.
It does not.
Yeah.
But, like, it is similar to that movie and Social Network in that, like, I personally think Molly, her only defining characteristic, along with the stars of those movies, is they have unfounded confidence. Like, their entire personality
yes.
is, I know what I'm talking about. And it's like, if... In like it's edited slickly enough that you can kind of coast on that and be into it, but it's not a real person,
no.
you know. And by the way, the amount, including Kevin Costner in this movie, the amount of roles that Sarah Sorkin has written, like even in Steve Jobs, like they're the same. Him and in this movie is the same as Jeff Daniels in Steve Jobs, which is the same as Jeff Daniels in The Newsroom. You know, it's just like there's no attempt to like bring anything new other than they talk fast.
Yeah.
So I mean, just I find him wildly overrated.
And
he does the thing at the beginning of this movie that I'm really tired of, which is what I call someone on cocaine explains the stock market to you. You know, I think Scorsese kind of pioneered it with Act 3 of Goodfellas, where literally, you know, Henry Hill is on cocaine and telling you all the things that he has to do. But it has turned into like the beginning of Magnolia or like those scenes where people are explaining these things to you and there's graphs and there's numbers and there's like, you know, dry punchlines. But it is a gussied up information dump. And this movie starts with that, and you're like, okay, Sorkin, take a breath, step back.
The only thing that saved that, like the opening for me, is the fact that Jessica Chastain is like a great voice actor.
And she does have a great voice. Performs the shit out of it.
Like, I want her to read my audiobook. Like, my, like, like, just. I just want her to read everything to me. That's what I want.
I really want her to hook up with the right writer and director, because I feel like this is now three movies from her where I feel like either somebody explains her to her or she explains herself to herself or to the audience. And I buy her intelligence and her efficiency, but the characters just come off as these creations that I never fully believe, even though two of them are real people. I'm counting Zero Dark Thirty and this movie and Miss Sloan. I don't necessarily believe in any of them, but I believe her and her ability to, like, bring them alive.
Wait,
if that makes sense.
Sure, absolutely.
Were any of those with women directors or writers?
Zero Dark Thirty was.
That's right. Okay, Zero Dark Thirty was Catherine Bigelow.
Yes.
A Zookeeper's Wife came out last year, and I'm still standing for it. I fucking love that movie.
It's on HBO Go right now.
Marketing's terrible. It was so terrible. But, like, it's one of those movies where you start watching it, and you really get into it, and you're like, oh, fuck, she's a great actor. Like, even though she has to kind of don this weird fake Polish accent or something, mm-hmm. like, she's still just such a great actor, and the part is so good for her.
Oh, yeah, no, she, I find her blameless in all this. Like, I love her in Coriolanus. I think she is just always extraordinary. What I'm saying is I wish that she would get vehicles that are worthy of her.
Do you know what I think a problem with it also is in this movie, and Miss Sloan in particular, she's given dialogue where she sounds smart saying it, but it's almost like she's being directed not to think about it as she says it. So it's just like, it seems like a dialogue bot as opposed to someone who like actually has to process the somewhat miraculous things that are coming out of her mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, there is that whole thing of, there is a history of people who write characters who talk in a way that no human being ever has, but you enjoy listening to it, like every character in All About Eve, for instance. Mm-hmm. But Sorkin writes characters that all talk like Sorkin characters after a while.
How did you guys feel about the representation of the gambling in the movie? I was happy that it is just kind of like writing on the side. How do you feel about gambling movies in general?
I mean, I like movies about people who are good at what they do. Mm-hmm. So that can be a thing that you can touch on in a gambling movie. And I like movies that sort of explain processes to me. So, like, for example, the remake of Casino Royale, the Daniel Craig one, like, that was a gambling scene where I felt like, going in knowing almost nothing about how Texas Hold'em works, I learned enough to get through that scene. Whereas this movie, after about the third scene where she starts getting really into the weeds about like what the other players are holding and how you bet accordingly and the jargony jargon, I'm just like,
I'm out.
No, at that point, she's like fully talking at us like a mean auctioneer. Just the flop, the river. Just like going through like all these terms. Yeah, Casino Royale was the first movie I thought of when I thought of the term gambling movies, because they also nail the glamour of gambling in that movie. And the other movie I think of when I think of gambling movies that gets the non-glamour of it is Lost in America.
Yes.
Where Julie Haggerty is like, the way she's drawn it, it's so pathetic that she's so into the game and she like loses her. Anyway.
If you pick up that Keno card, I will kill you.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the unglamorous. I'm a huge fan of like California Split.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And Hard Eight.
Hard Eight, yes. And
in a way, I like the kind of stylized gambling of The Sting as well.
Oh, totally.
I love that because that movie is so fucking good. Hmm. But California Split is like my favorite because it's like a weird buddy comedy-ish, but it's not. And you just get to learn a little bit more, not about poker itself, but about like low rent poker and the people who just kind of get obsessed with these small rooms and how they get to know each other. Yep. And it just feels like chummy, like a chummy community where they kind of hate each other too.
It's like Reno, but not Vegas. You know, it's smaller. Yeah.
And I think Casino is a movie that ages very well. I hate's a strong word. I was not a fan of Casino when I first saw it. I was like, you did Goodfellas already, bro. What are you doing to me? But now I feel like that's really aged, and it's almost like you get like two movies in one. One thing that I hate about, it seems like people who play poker, they're like the brosifs who couldn't play sports, you know? I'm just like, ugh, I don't want to hang out with any of those dudes. And I haven't seen The Sting, but it seems like movies, like poker players, like back in the day, like The Sting. I enjoyed Maverick. I feel terrible saying this. I enjoyed Maverick.
I loved it at the time.
At the time, exactly.
Yeah, why not?
At the time, I thought, well, Mel Gibson.
Yeah, we didn't know.
I thought it was super fun.
He was America's sweetheart back then.
But oh man, I can't stand poker players.
The people, like the characters in Molly's Game, I'm just like, oh God, I never want to be anywhere near around like,
right?
Like Tobey Maguire, like Leonardo DiCaprio, like playing poker and trying to ruin people's lives. You know, they're just like the most despicable people.
Yeah, there's no sympathy there. Like, right. I don't feel bad for the guy. Did you guys have guesses as you were watching? Like, who's Michael Cera playing? I thought it was Shia LaBeouf. I was like, that dude is Shia LaBeouf. No doubt in my mind.
I actually kind of forget who's in that circle. I know Tobey Maguire is one of them, and I figure, I feel like he's in the shape of Tobey Maguire.
Everything I've read suggests that he is 100% Tobey Maguire, actually. Because I sort of watched it thinking, oh, it's a, you know, to my favorite line from Metropolitan, it's a composite like New York Magazine uses. But apparently, no, he is all Tobey all the time, based on what I've read.
That does not make me want to hang out with Tobey Maguire. I want to hang out with Parker Spider-Man.
It's like Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio and all the pussy posse from the 1990s posse. They called themselves.
Yes, they did.
I didn't make that up.
Which is a beautiful soap opera cut, yes.
David Blaine.
Yes.
We asked some Twitter questions. We asked, what other great gambling films are out there? What are your favorite gambling films? And Kaiser Troll, gambling film, Bob Le Flambeur.
Ooh. So,
two people said that, I think.
Jean-Pierre Melville.
Yeah.
Which I think there's actually, depending on where you live, there is a new restoration floating around. So you can see it on the big screen.
I saw Bob Le Flambeur, and I made that noise just because I like the name Bob Le Flambeur.
It is a great name. Yeah. It was remade in English with Nick Nolte, and I can't remember the name of it. But I think Neil Jordan directed it. Mm-hmm. Is it ring a bell?
That does ring a bell.
Anyway, it's a remake of Bob Le Flambeur.
It was like Bob the Flamer or something.
Yes.
It was like the American version.
Shockingly, did it. They played Outfest and then was never heard from again.
I think it's one of those movies where it's the fill in the blank, that's his job.
I think it's
accountant or some shit
The Cooler. That's a good gamble.
The Cooler is a good one.
William H.
Macy.
And Maria Bello.
Alec Baldwin. Yep. The Worst Adults podcast, they said The Sting, hands down. They don't want no arguing, yo. It's The Sting.
Shout out to Eileen Brennan in that movie, who's giving you the smokiest dame ever.
The damiest dame, yes.
Chase Island says God of Gamblers.
Oh, okay. That's a Hong Kong film, I believe.
Oh, I don't know it.
Huh. I know of it, but I've seen God of Cookware, which is a kung fu movie that's all about kitchenware and cooking. It's amazing.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I don't know what happens in God of Gamblers, but I'm in.
Let's put that on our list to review. I like everything Alonzo just said right there. All right. So overall, everybody, what do we think of Molly's game? Should we screen it, stream it, or skip it? I say stream it on a Sunday, chilling.
Yeah, stream it. You know, her performance is worth seeing. There's a little bit of razzle dazzle that's entertaining, but it wears out its welcome.
Yes, I would say it's slick and nothing else. So it's you won't be unentertained, but it's not edifying entertainment.
I'm agreement. Stream it because Jessica Chastain, her performance, and the first half of the film is actually pretty decent, and then it falls apart. That's it.
Yeah, that's what's up, yo. Molly's Game is in theaters now, but watch it when it's on CISO. Everybody, also, just so you know, I bought CISO and I'm bringing it back.
I still have the app on my Apple TV. I can't bring myself to erase it.
I put Crackle on my phone. I don't know why. That's how bored I was one day. I was like, oh, fuck it, I'll put Crackle on my phone.
You need Sports Jeopardy in your hand.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will have our new segment, You're Wrong, with our very own Ingu King, and then we'll have our staff picks. We'll be right back, y'all.
The Dead Pilot Society podcast brings you hilarious comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Aubrey Plaza, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, John Hodgman, Adam Scott, Molly Shannon, Busy Phillips, Tom Lennon, Anna Camp, Laurie Metcalf, Felicia Day, Michael Ian Black, Adam Savage, Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz, Skylar Astin, Mae Whitman, Josh Molina, Ben Feldman, Nicole Byer, Jason Ritter, Sarah Chalk, Steve Agee, Jane Levy, Allison Tolman, Danielle Nicolette, Casey Wilson, Anna Ortiz, Lorraine Newman, June Diane Raphael, Kieran Shipka, Ed Week, Zach Knight, Carrie Kenny Silver, John Ross Bowie, Jamie Denbo, Janet Varney, Alexander Forsani, Ellie Morales, Matt Worley, and many more. Listen at MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shall You? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Now it is time for a new segment that we have here called You Are Wrong. Here's how it's going to work. April, Alonzo, Lewis, and I are going to share our very valid opinions on movies, and then black-hearted film critic Ingu King will be joining us to let us know how we are wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it here on Maximum Fun Shows. It's the Maximum Fun hater, Ingu King. Hey, Ingu, how are you?
Okay, first of all.
Here we go. Here we go. Okay, say that shit, girl.
The color of my heart is purple, not black. Second of all, Crystal Dad is Irish,
yes,
not British.
Yes, I thought of that myself. Very good.
We were wrong. We're very sorry.
Oh, I heard you guys' episode last week about downsizing. And you guys, I don't think we're like super into the movie, but really, I felt like you should have chat on the movie like a lot more. So that's why I'm calling in this week.
Let the shitting commence.
It was a very middle of the road movie to me. What did we get wrong, Ingu?
I think that there were a couple of things you guys did really well, which is sort of talk about how it's an excellent satire of like the humdrummy unimaginativeness of the American dream. I don't know how many times I have seen Tony Romo in Alexander Payne movies and literally nowhere else, but that is an excellent inclusion. And I think that there, you guys did also like a great job talking about how the Hong Chau character was an Asian version, basically, of like a magical Negro character. But I really feel like there was one scene that completely sort of unmade the movie for me, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Yes. Toward the end, after Matt Damon's character and Hong Chau's character. So there's a scene where after they sleep together, she is like, wait, why are you leaving me? And then she lists like the 8 different ways to fuck or whatever. And I think that like up until then, I was like really on alert for something to be offended by about this character, because as a person of color, that's generally just like how I watch movies that have a character in my race, right? Because Hollywood is now at this point so white that every time there's a person of color, you're just like waiting for the moment that they're going to fuck up. And so I'm watching and I'm watching and sort of like trying to be patient. I'm watching it with like my Vietnamese American friend who is like literally like gripping her hand rest, like she's like in the white knuckle mode, and she's like, am I actually okay with this? And then we get to the scene where it all just like falls apart, where she lists the various ways of like fucking that people have, and suddenly you go from this character who is maybe sort of like a person that could be found, who is now suddenly in a movie, to a character who is like literally straight out of Full Metal Jacket. And it's the point at which you're supposed to laugh at her English, because instead of like to make love or to have sex, she just keeps saying, fuck, 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 fuck. And you're like, oh, great. Here's a scene where like there's an Asian woman. She's in, I guess she's technically an immigrant. And we're supposed to laugh at her English. So I hate this movie.
Do you know what, Lewis, did you see Downsizing?
Yeah, I did. I was going to say that one thing. When I saw the movie The Disaster Artist this year, too, I noticed in the theater that, like, sometimes people were kind of just laughing, not at what he was saying, but and I understand like that Tommy was like a strange character, so it's okay to laugh at certain things about him, but it's like they were just laughing at the fact that he had a funny accent,
yeah,
some of the time.
Sure.
So it's one of those things where it's like maybe it's not even written to be like you're laughing at her accent, but it's like some people are going to derive that. So there's that weird discomfort of like what's allowed and what, you know. So
I guess I'm aware of that phenomenon. I mean, I was just thinking about like I watched The Disaster Artist as a screener and I watched Downsizing in Italy. So, like, it was maybe a different kind of thing. I mean, but that's when you get into the thing of, like, I've watched Brokeback Mountain with people where when the two of them reunite for the first time and kiss, like, the audience are laughing.
Right.
And it was more just out of a nervous, like, oh, two guys are kissing and I don't know how to deal with that. I don't know. My takeaway was that the speech was funny and not that we were supposed to be laughing at her accent. But I'm sure there are people out there who will miss that nicety.
Right, yeah. Right.
I mean, when I hear Scarface, when I hear fucking Tony Montana's accent, I want to fight people because I'm like, fuck this. My dad's Cuban. I've lived with Cubans. We don't sound like that. Whatever that dude is doing, no. So, I mean, I understand that. And if I'm not catching that, then fuck, that's on me.
Ingu, did you have problems with the speech itself where, like, the eight different ways to fuck, like, that she got it from, like, an American couple or something? Did that seem, is that what you're talking about, or?
No, the point, the angle at which I'm coming from with this is that there's, like, a very, very, very limited amount of representation in terms of, like, how we hear Asian women with accents talking to white men in the movies. And the fact that it sort of goes from this very almost saintly caricature to this woman who, from this woman who basically devotes her whole life to other people, to then going in like this, like completely other direction and basically talking like how Americans imagine an Asian sex worker to talk. That was the problem that I had with it.
Also, I have to say about Hong Chau, I've never been so sympathetic with somebody because she clearly is in the part of, like, the movie so dips away from its original concept, which I thought was, like, kind of cute and fun, and tries to turn into this other thing. And it's so, I just found it incredibly drab. So the fact that she had to, I think, almost single-handedly spice up the movie, I was like, well, I mean, good on you for giving it a shot.
Or does anybody have anything else?
What about Molly's game?
Yeah, I think we have time for one more question, and that's a solid one there, April. What did you think of Molly's game?
I can't believe you guys didn't like the first ski scene. I mean, like, I can't believe you. First of all, I can't believe you're putting me in the position of defending Aaron.
You love him.
But that first, like, the first 6 minutes or so, when it's that scene where she's about to go down that ski slope, I thought after watching that scene, I'm actually in for like maybe a tolerable movie from Aaron Sorkin. I was actually like kind of psyched. But the rest of it, I was with April. I thought the first scene, the first half of the movie where she's in LA and she's trying to build up her career and trying to figure out like where she's able to make her place in this gambling world. Like, I thought that was actually pretty fascinating because I mean, we have all of these movies where you basically have like one woman and then like a bunch of dudes, right? And no one ever thinks like, oh, like, isn't it weird that like there is one woman here and 11 male characters and like no one is going to comment on it. And this was a movie where she was like, hey, this is weird. Let's talk about it. But yeah. By the time Kevin Costner is like, so here's what I think is wrong with you. Don't actually say anything because everything that you think about yourself is wrong.
Ingu, before we go, is there anything else that you think we're wrong about?
Other than your hair.
Other than what?
Your hair.
Just in a general way. She can't see you, but you know what? Your hair is wrong.
It's wrong. Whatever it is, it's wrong.
You heard it here first.
Well, thank you for putting my hair on blast, Ingu. And thank you for, thanks for being here. I'm pretty sure we will be doing this again, yes? Thanks,
all
Ingu.
Right, bye.
Take care. Sam for our staff picks y'all every week at the end of the show. We recommend movies to you that you can watch anywhere. You can go buy them, what have you. Since we watched Molly's Game this week, I am recommending the 1997 David Fincher joint, The Game, with my man Michael Douglas. And
oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I love that movie so goddamn much. And I realize that it's Michael Douglas and this guy who I think has male resting bitch face, Sean Penn.
Oh, sure.
That motherfucker never looks happy. The game is about Michael Douglas plays your typical fucking rich douche that he used to fucking kill back in the 90s. And he gets put into this game, kind of like a game of life, that pushes him to the extreme and you kind of don't know when the game ends and when the game stops. Highly recommend that movie, The Game, on Blu-ray. Get the Criterion.
There's a new comedy coming out that uses The Game as its kind of basis. Did you see the
Game Night or whatever it
is? Yeah, Game Night. It's like Jason Bateman and Rachel
McAdams.
And, yeah.
I remember seeing the trailer to that a while ago. And
it looked funny. I don't know if I can trust it. You can't trust a trailer.
No,
it looked funny.
Alonzo, what do you got?
Okay, so usually I'm recommending some like foreign film or documentary, and maybe it's showing in New York and like one other city if you're lucky. But this week, Paddington 2, y'all. It's awesome. I love the first Paddington. I love this one. It is funny. It is sweet. It is charming. I got a little verklempt at the end. It's gorgeous. There is a sequence that calls to mind Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times and the Grand Budapest Hotel and Skidoo. Well, I will leave it at that.
Wow.
But it is dynamite. Sally Hawkins, again, perfection. And if you thought that The Shape of Water was too Amelie-ish, wait till you see the Paddington movies. But,
okay.
You know, but it works. If you had a problem with it in Shape of Water, I think you'll allow it for the kind of sweet children's films that these are. But they're funny and they're clever and there are jokes for adults, but they're not like dirty jokes for adults. They're just smart jokes for adults. And the cast is incredible. It's, you know, Sally Hawkins and Hugh Bonneville and, Peter Capaldi and Brendan Gleeson and just all, you know, Hugh Grant is hilarious and very kind of self-aware and archly funny. And I love Paddington 2. Go see it.
That's what's up. Sally Hawkins, she get freaky with the bear?
No.
Lewis, what do you got for us?
I think that was a valid journalistic question.
Thank
you. Did the right
you.
Thing.
Thank you.
So we're in the season where you're wondering if, like, long shot nominees will get into the Oscar race, whatever. My person in that world is Leslie Manville, who is amazing in Phantom Thread, which a movie nothing about me was prepared to like it going in. I'm not here for Daniel Day-Lewis most of the time, weirdly.
Wow.
I'm not even here for Paul Thomas Anderson. And believe me, I'm like an Amy Mann stan, so I should have liked Magnolia.
Whoa,
you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
All these things. Phantom Thread is amazing. Leslie Manville is amazing. The movie I'm recommending is from the 90s where she plays a social worker, Secrets and Lies.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Mike Lee.
With Brenda Bledlin and this actress, Marion Jean-Baptiste. It's basically like what Mike Lee tends to do, which is like throw a bunch of characters together, and it's like a family drama, and it's about a woman who is estranged from her family, reunites with her mother. It seems somewhat basic on paper. It is like the loveliest movie with the best dialogue and the best acting. It is so unpretentious and gripping for being a kind of a long movie. And at the time, it was like a big Oscar draw. It was an Oscar nominee for Best Picture. Brenda Bledlin and Marion Jean-Baptiste both nominated. It's a movie I think about a lot. I finally got around to it last year, being somebody who, like, I want to watch slow movies from the 90s, just chemically, that's who I am. And this, I think, is that. My number one in that category is this movie, Secrets and Lies.
There's a stretch of Mike Lee there that is just like firing on all cylinders, like High Hopes and Career Girls and Naked. And what's the one with...
Not Topsy Turvy.
No, the one with Bubble, but as the angry anorexic.
Before that. Yes.
Yeah, anyway, just like that there's a... He's just amazing.
April, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to go with another, you know, movie that should have gotten some awards, Crank. And Crank, high Voltage,
yes.
The second one.
Both and of them?
There's a reason why, because Brian Taylor, who's one of the guys who made the Crank movies, he's got a movie called Manging Out called Mom and Dad, starring Nick Cage and Selma Blair next week, and it is so fucking good. It is just like, it is... I saw it like at a midnight showing back in September and was just like, I'm so happy I stayed up because I'm grinning ear to ear for like another 24 hours because of this hilarious action, violent film about a weird disease that's unexplained and you don't really need it. It just goes straight into the action of this town and like or all over the U.S. even, where parents suddenly start wanting to kill their children. But at the same time, they still have like the same parental things where like you should clean your room, but then they're still trying to kill them with like a pickaxe, you know?
Yes.
And it's so hilarious. And Selma Blair and Nick Cage are amazing in it together. So that's coming out next week. But to prepare, y'all should watch Crank and Crank High Voltage. High Voltage, because those movies are hilarious.
They're the greatest.
They're so good. They're so fun. I think they're good for the whole family. I think they're so underrated, you know, because people see them as kind of schlocky, but they're so self-aware. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're really having fun with action films.
Yeah.
And Jason Statham is... amazing. He's so funny. Obviously, everyone who's ever seen him in anything or in Fast and Furious movies knows that he's a scene stealer. But in this, it's just he gets to be hilarious and do action. And it's everything you've ever wanted out of a movie. Yeah. Everything.
They are A-plus B-movies.
Yes, they're wonderful. So watch those.
Somehow I felt like I was addicted to Adderall after I finished watching those movies. They're so good. They're like...
It comes with a little package of those. The Blu-ray.
It's a patch.
Get the Blu-ray and you get the...
all right. Well, next week we are going to get up, for the new Taraji Henson film, Proud Mary. Should we all wear Tina Turner dresses next week?
Yeah.
I don't know that I have the thighs for that.
Oh, we can make it happen, bro. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, and we know you do, because that's what's up, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because when you do, we will give you shout-outs. We especially love it when you leave us those 5-star reviews. I got 5 on it. Guys, you know who loves the show? Music Man 1967. She says it's a weekend staple for me. Love it. Well, you know what? We love you, Music Man 1967. And our girl Esmeralda Nitz. Their perspectives are important ones to hear, and their good humor and smarts make every episode great fun.
Oh.
Esmeralda Nitz. Thank you.
Thank you,
Esmeralda. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod, or you can send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Lewis, thanks for being here, dude.
Oh, I had the best time. I got to say Marion Jean-Baptiste like 3 times.
April Alonzo, thank you as always.
Always a pleasure, sir.
And before we go, I just want to ask somebody if they have anything they want to plug. Lewis, I'm hearing that you have a show.
You heard correctly.
Yeah.
It's called Keep It. It's on the Crooked Media Network, and it's hosted by Ira Madison III, who, if you experience on Twitter, is what we call a filth reader, calling people out. And I'm his co-host along with Kara Brown, formerly of Jezebel, now writes for the show Grownish. We just did our first episode. I got to talk a lot about Oprah. I got to talk a lot about Me Too. And I have to say it was pretty rad. And I also got to name all of Meryl Streep's Oscar nominations on the spot. And girl, I pulled through.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you
would.
Did. That's what's up. That's
I always believed in you, Lewis.
I have something I want to plug. I will be performing. This comes out on Friday. I will be performing on Sunday at the Roosevelt Hotel. It's the 8th annual 51st Jokes every year here in L.A. and in New York. And they started doing it in Chicago. And I believe they do it in Denver now as well. Comedians in the city, they get together and we all tell our first joke of the new year. It's 50 comics. You get 3 minutes. It's a really fun show. It's happening at the Roosevelt Hotel. There's an after party afterwards. I'll be DJing the after party. I'll be tweeting about that. So if you follow me on Twitter at Ricky Carmona, you can get info about that. Alonzo, anything you want to plug, sir?
Well, if you guys want to hear me talk more about movies, check out Linoleum Knife, which is the podcast I host with my husband, Dave White, who some of you might have heard on Pop Rocket. And if you want to hear our shows about television and food and other topics, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife. And if for some weird reason you also want to see my face, I'm over on What the Flick on the YouTube. I'm on What the Flick on the Young Turks Network at YouTube and reviewing movies and recapping TV shows and all that stuff.
You guys want to see his face.
You
guys,
you'll
want to see his
you're
face.
Gonna, you're going to want to see it.
It's whatever.
You'll want to see his face.
We're fans.
Alonzo is amazing on What the Flick. I watch every episode.
Yeah.
Bless your heart.
April, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, we've got a really fun episode of Switchblade Sisters coming up with me talking to Mariana Palka, who is a writer and director. A lot of people might know her also as Netflix's Glow's Vicky the Viking.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
She's coming on the show to talk about... she chose Star Trek Generations, the movie, to talk about.
Yes!
Not the most beloved Star Trek film, but she goes so deep. I was not expecting for the emotion to come forth from her about this, but it is really formative for her life, apparently. And yeah, you guys should listen to this. I love hearing her talk about her love for Star Trek Generations, which is not a great film, but you know, I came to appreciate it through her. So yeah, Switchblade Sisters.
That's what's up. Oh, you know what I remembered? We are putting together a playlist on Spotify of music scores and music soundtracks from the movies that we either talk about here on the show or just our favorite movies. It's April will be putting... right now, it's just all shit that I love. But April will be putting stuff on there. Alonzo will be putting stuff on there.
I got to figure out how to make Spotify open on my phone. It doesn't want to lately, but I'm going to get in there.
Old man Neuralda.
Yeah, I know. You kids with your newfangled technology. Yeah. I'm going to pull my records out.
No. We're going to have a link to both of those playlists on the whoshayamaximumfun.org page. I'm sure I'll tweet about it and all that stuff. So hopefully you guys can, like, do, you know, laundry, whatever, the house chores, and be bumping some movie tunes, y'all. Our producer for the show is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. You've been listening to Who Shot Ya? This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.